New year, new you, or at least a new uniform. If you're in healthcare, it's the perfect time to upgrade your scrubs to Figs. If you've tuned in before, you know we love sharing clinical pearls, practical tips and tricks for real-world care you often won't find in your textbooks. While we're at it, we should mention one of our favorite hacks that completely changed how we show up for work, Figs. Figs makes scrubs designed for performance. Lightweight, breathable, antimicrobial, and functional details like moisture-wicking fabric and pockets where you actually need them. My favorite Figs are my black joggers. Plus, with new limited edition colors and styles, Figs is putting the fresh in uniform refresh. Scrubs, outerwear, footwear, accessories, and more. You'll be looking sharp, feeling good, and ready to take on anything. 2026 is here. Let's do this. Take 15% off your first order at wearfigs.com with the code FIGSRX. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.
Thanks so much for joining for another episode of Run the List, a medical education podcast designed by Dr. Naveen Kumar, an attending gastroenterologist at Brigham and Women's Hospital, Emily Gutowski, a Harvard medical student planning on going into internal medicine, and Dr. Walker Redd, myself, an internal medicine resident here at Brigham and Women's Hospital. As a quick disclaimer, this podcast is meant for informational and educational purposes only. It should not be understood as medical advice under any circumstances.
Today, I'm so excited to introduce you all to Dr. Lisa Rosenbaum, our spokesperson for cardiology on Run the List, and is going to tell you a bit about her very interesting career. So thank you so much, Dr. Rosenbaum, for joining us on this episode.
Thank you for having me.
And just for listeners, we are doing this actually over the phone. We're deep in the coronavirus pandemic right now, so personal contact is limited, so please forgive any audio imperfections. Dr. Rosenbaum, can you first tell us a little bit about where you did your training?
Yeah, I went to UC San Francisco for medical school and then did my internal medicine residency at Massachusetts General Hospital. And then I did cardiology fellowship at Cornell, New York Presbyterian Hospital in New York. And then after that, I spent a year at the New England Journal of Medicine as their fellow. They have a fellowship every year. And then I did the Robert Wood Johnson Clinical Scholars Program at the University of Pennsylvania. And then I took a job at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and as a national correspondent for the New England Journal.
Wow. Okay. Very, very busy person. So we're so grateful that you took the time. So I want to start off by getting a sense of what interested you in the field of cardiology.
Well, my mother's a cardiologist, so I think that from an early age, I probably felt this awe for the profession and this specialty in particular. I definitely had an abiding sense that she was saving lives, and she was. She worked a ton, often worked on the weekends. She'd be home and be helping us with our homework or whatever, and then leave and go take care of a patient who was having a STEMI. I think that was really sort of magical to me, and that feeling never went away. And then as soon as I started medical school, I think on the first day we had a case. Maybe it was tamponade. I don't actually even remember exactly what it was, but I just remember being floored by it, you know, just sort of totally falling in love with the subject. And then I think we did organ systems. At the time, it was more unusual to do that, but clearly for me, the cardiovascular block was better than anything else. So I actually never really thought twice about it. I kind of wanted to be a psychiatrist for maybe a second. I feel like when you're a medical student, you know, when you rotate through psychiatry, you feel like you have a role because you get to just sit and listen to people in a way that's meaningful. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. But my parents basically were like, you know, it's important to listen to people and whatever you do. So yeah, so I never really thought about anything else within medicine.
Since you entered the field of cardiology, you've done a lot of different things. How has your career kind of changed over time?
Well, I mean, the other obviously part of my life is that I'm a writer. So I really started doing some creative writing when I was in college, but more as sort of a way to just deal with the world. I mean, it's sort of always thinking about the world and how people interact with each other. And so I actually wrote fiction. And then I spent a year at Columbia after college before I went to med school in a fiction writing program. But it became very clear to me during that year that I was not cut out to just be a writer. I definitely needed human interaction. So I dropped out of the program actually and then went to med school. But that sort of impulse to create never went away. And, you know, I did things like I worked in a lab when I was in college and I was horrible. I just so not suited for that. But my grandfather was a physician writer. And so he wrote a book called The Taste of My Own Medicine, which was made into the movie The Doctor in 1992 or so. And then when I got into med school in 2002, I guess, he'd wanted to write a book with me. So basically, I'd had this sort of little time in my life where I did writing and then it sort of went away. But then he decided we were going to do this thing together. And so until I finished residency, my writing life really consisted of this sort of thing that I had with my grandfather where he would just tell me stories and I would write them down. It was very fulfilling in its own right because it was so meaningful to him and it was all about medicine. And but then he died a week or a month or so before I finished residency and sort of left me with this focus and also passion, really, to sort of chronicle what's happening in medicine and how to make it better. And it wasn't this thing I felt like I had to do for my career. I mean, and when I look back, I realize how valuable this was. So I feel like there's so much pressure in medicine to do research, to put on your CV so you get the fellowship, and then you do it when you're in training so that you can get the job, and then you do it with your job so you can get your grant. And like that treadmill never stops. And I think that one of the best things that happened to me in terms of this relationship I had with my grandfather, there was just so much inherent meaning in the activity that it was never about doing it for the sake of succeeding. And so I feel like because of that, I sort of recoil from a lot of the other things that I'm supposed to do to sort of push my career forward. But it also, it's just always really grounded me to do what I love. And I realize not everyone has that luxury. So I feel incredibly lucky to have that. But yes, it ended up that I got really lucky and I had this opportunity at the New England Journal where I just got to write. So I got to turn it into a career. But I don't know that I set out with that intention. It just sort of happened.
Yeah, I think what you say is so true. And I think as a med student, I especially see how we are kind of just on this endless wheel of adding things to our CV to get to the next phase of training. But if you can find something along the way that you really love and gives you fulfillment, it doesn't even feel like, you know, a CV addition.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly how I feel about writing. I mean, also, just to be clear, a lot of days I really hate writing. Uh-huh. But I mean, in general, in terms of the arc of my career, it was like I would wake up in the morning and that is what I want to do.
Wow, wow. So that actually brings me to my next question. So what's your time breakdown? How often are you seeing patients versus doing writing?
So I do 11 weeks, or that's what I did this year, 10 to 11 weeks of inpatient time. And then the rest of the time I spend at the journal, I sit in on a lot of the editorial activities also. And then I'm always writing something. So, actually I'm writing a book. This is the first time I've been able to say that. I've said that for a long time and I haven't actually been writing it, but I really am writing a book. But I was writing about patient safety, which I hope will also be a part of the book. But now I'm just writing about coronavirus. Mm-hmm. But I'm always sort of working on something or I go crazy. But yeah, the rest of the time I'm just in the hospital. So I don't have a clinic. So I'm either on or doing this other thing in my life.
So when you look to the next 5-10 years in cardiology, do you have a sense of what you expect to change?
Well, I hope we can get more women.
Yeah.
So I think that some of what's really exciting in cardiology is probably happening most with valvular interventions. So minimally invasive valvular interventions, I think, are going to continue to be the most exciting thing that's happening clinically. I think that cardiology is obviously firmly embedded in the whole world of internal medicine and obviously is a huge part of medicine because so many people have cardiovascular disease. So I think that all the forces shaping medicine will also be affecting cardiology. So I think that, you know, we're increasingly sub-specialized. I think that we have to think really hard about what that means for our patients and our ability to sort of continue to be doctors who are, you know, assuming all aspects of patient care, if that's what we want to be. And if we don't, then we have to think about you know, how we're caring for patients in a way that makes them feel like they have a doctor. So I think that's an emerging challenge that is just going to probably become heightened as people develop even more skills and expertise. So we'll see what happens with that. I'd love to see all of the things happening in terms of behavioral modification pan out so that we get better at prevention. I would love to see us, you know, understand how to counsel people about diet and exercise in a way that's really evidence-based. But I think that we're far away from that, but, you know, maybe all the technology will pan out. But I think that's a sort of an interesting and untapped area. I mean, that's what, when you talk to people, that's what they really want to know. How to eat, how much to exercise. But it's this area where we have so much to learn.
Right. Very true. You mentioned wanting to have more women in cardiology. How has it been being a woman in a traditionally kind of more male-dominated field?
Yeah, that's a good question. So my perspective is so anchored in having grown up watching my mom. Mm-hmm. So I think that I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for my colleagues. But for me, I have this feeling of a sense that we've actually come so far because I saw what she had to deal with. Mm-hmm. And she really did it all. I mean, I don't know how she did it, but she did. I mean, she's still super mom, you know, like she just somehow managed to get me like a gallon of Purell. but she's also, but she's an incredible, incredible doctor. And so like sometimes now, you know, if I'm with her traveling or wherever, I hear her on the phone at night talking to her patients or something. And it's even more meaningful to me now because I learned from it in this way that I probably even didn't before, you know? So I do think that there are challenges around gender and equity that are facing the entire profession, and that there are people leading the charge in terms of, you know, making sure that salaries are equal and that we have time for parental leave for both parents, that women are getting promoted, that women are getting leadership jobs. Like all these things are so important. But I don't feel like personally, because I'm a woman, I haven't gotten to do what I want. I get to do exactly what I want every day. And so for me, yeah, I don't feel like I have been denied any opportunities or have been held back in any way. And again, I have an appreciation for the mere fact that we're paying attention to these challenges when I know we weren't when my mom was in the prime of her career. That encourages me. Mm-hmm. I also have to say, like, my mom, she's very active in the American College of Cardiology. And, you know, one of the things that she's most focused on is sort of mentoring women, helping women mid-career who maybe after they've had children sort of be able to thrive academically as they try to balance both personal and professional goals. So it's something that she does and I sort of watch and admire.
Yeah, wow. It's so important to have mentors and role models in these kinds of positions just to show you that you can do it too, just like your mom did for you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, but I don't do like half of what she does, but yes.
So we can kind of begin to wrap up, but I want to finish by asking you, for those med students and early residents listening to this podcast, what would you tell people who are considering cardiology but maybe are intimidated a bit by how time intensive and how acute the issues are in cardiology?
Well, I would tell them, first of all, to come talk to me. Okay. and then really, there are lots of ways to be a cardiologist. And as far as the acuity of the issues, I mean, that we can't sort of whitewash. I mean, I think that that's true. That's part of why I love cardiology. I like that you have really sick patients for whom you need to make quick decisions. I mean, I'm not ever in an operating room, and I'm not in the cath lab or the EP lab either, so I'm not doing procedures, but that you have to make decisions quickly is actually something that I really love. And I definitely love from the beginning. So if you're not someone who likes that, I wouldn't pursue a career in cardiology. I would say that, you know, one of the wonderful things about training and, you know, being on your rotations is that you figure out whether you like that or not. A lot of people who feel scared at the beginning end up really liking it. So my feeling about the time intensive and hours worked, and I can't prove this, but I think that the most important thing for anybody facing these decisions about career paths is to realize that the goal should not be, well, people need to figure out what they want for themselves. I totally get that. But if you choose what's most meaningful to you, it doesn't feel like work. So the time intensive aspect becomes less relevant. If you choose something that you don't love, then it feels like a job and it's onerous and you wish to work fewer hours. I can't say that I've ever wished my days were shorter when I'm attending. I enjoy the work so deeply and there's nothing about it that I would change. I mean, it feels like what I should be doing because I love it. And you put the time in because it matters and people's lives are at stake and it feels like the right thing to do. And I think that one of the worst things we've done in terms of thinking about burnout is made it an issue of too much time working. And instead of stepping back and asking ourselves, you know, how do we make medicine more meaningful? How do we help people make career choices that really lets them do the work that's meaningful to them? So I do worry that the message trickles down as sort of, you know, choose a lifestyle specialty, whatever that means at this point, so that you don't have to work as much. And I definitely feel like for some people that is totally the right decision to prioritize that. But I also think that for those who are, you know, have that visceral feeling, like I'm so drawn to this, but I'm afraid I'm going to be working too much, that we as a profession need to do a better job of sort of recentering ourselves on that inherent meaning, and that that's okay. And that instead of saying like, you should go home because you're working too long, we should sort of go back to saying, wow, that's awesome that you love your work so much that you don't want to go home, you know, and that's awesome too. And medicine needs that so much. Our patients need that. And our culture really needs it.
This has been honestly so helpful in learning about all the different possibilities in cardiology. So Dr. Rosenbaum, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. And we hope to have you back soon on Run the List.
Thank you so much for having me.